Welcome back to the wonderful Women of Officiating, Episode 5, featuring Maya Shaka. Maya is a 15-year official from Rochester, New York, via Virginia Beach, who recently made national headlines in March by getting hired as an NFL official. She's getting ready to make her NFL debut this September 2021, and to top that off, Maya is also a Division I basketball official working in the MEAC conference on the women's side. In this episode, Maya goes into detail about what she loves about officiating, how to overcome mistakes, and what the impact that she created means to her. She also elaborates on the positive influence of her mentors, how to block out negative voices, and offers advice for officials who are frustrated with their careers. We really appreciate you listening to this episode and this series. Do us one last favor before you go. Have a great rest of your day.
Hi, this is NFL official Maya Shaka. Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs podcast. Serve the game.
History made. The NFL announcing Maya Shaka, 38 years old from Virginia Beach, has become the first black female official in the league's history.
What does the impact that I have created mean to me? Being able to break a race and a gender barrier is a huge moment in my life, but it's also a huge moment for my community, for the young ladies that I teach every day, for any young lady that I come in contact with. It just shows them that, you know, that as long as they work hard for something, things are possible. And it really does not matter, you know, if you never played a sport, if you never played it, doesn't matter what limitations that you think you may possibly have. I just think it's real important that you continue to strive to reach those goals. And in the National Football League, we have women that are not only officials, we have women who are working in the replay. We have women who are working as agents. There are a lot of women now who are coaches. And so by me being able to walk amongst, you know, students every single day and me being able to share my journey with them and tell them about these other ladies that I come in contact with, it's just more motivation for them to strive harder and maybe to reach their goals and aspirations as well.
And you have to understand people get advanced and people get games for some reasons that don't have anything to do with probably what's going on in the game at that point. You know, it becomes a numbers game. So at that point there, you just really just have to believe in yourself. In terms of roadblocks or anything that's bouncing back at you, you know, my best advice is to always just focus on the process. And when I learned how to do that, just focus on the process and really respect the grind, you know, putting in the work of conditioning and watching film and, you know, talking to coaches and talking to players, you know, before the games and, you know, doing the right things in scrimmages, taking that extra time, you know, just to learn the game. I think that for me, that was more exciting than actually seeing the results of it. And so once you start to invest in the process, you're not worried about any roadblocks or barriers. Because that's always going to happen in life. You know, it's going to come to a point where those same people that put up those barriers for you, once they see how well you're doing and they see everybody else jumping on the bandwagon, they're going to jump too. So you can't fight those battles head on. Those are just battles that you have to fight for work.
You know, Maya, I thought a real interesting crossroads that you've documented before is sort of expressing some frustration about where you were in your football career at the time and then how you decided to become a certified basketball official. And it gave you that added toughness and swagger that you were missing to take your game to the next level. So this is a two-part question. Talk about how becoming a basketball official helped you grow as a football official, and then also about the tutelage of decorated NBA referee Tony Brothers and what he meant to you.
Okay. That this is actually a really cool chapter in my life, because it came to a point, actually it's right after I stepped off that field in Kansas City, and I crossed paths with Chuck, and he told me to trust him about football. Things for me on the NFL side started to decline. I was still in the loop, I was still being looked at, but I was no longer getting, you know, like training camp assignments. And so at that point, it's easy for somebody to say, okay, well, I don't think anybody's looking at me anymore. I'm going to get into a slump. And for me, it was weird during that same time of the year, because my training camp season was, I believe, in August. I went back, I worked the full college schedule. I did fairly well. But sometimes you just get that vibe where you know that things are just off. And I was on my way home for one of my college games, college football games. And I was sitting next to an ESPN camera guy who recognized me. And he knew that I worked football. And we started a conversation about basketball. And he asked me if I ever officiated basketball. I told him, no, I played, but I never officiated because I've just been so hard grinding away at the football game. And he says, well, I'm going to introduce you to somebody. He's sitting about two seats behind us. And that person was Leroy Richardson, who's another NBA official. And I talked to Leroy. He planed in Norfolk. And we walked from, the gate where the plane let us off all the way to the parking garage. And it was funny how we were parked on the same floor. And that's really, what are the odds? Like in the airport, if you're parked on the same floor, then we start walking. Our cars are maybe about three or four spaces, away from each other. And so Leroy gives me his card. And this was, I believe, in November. And he gives me his card. And he lets me know that himself and Tony Brothers are taking over our high school association. That was close. And they would love to have me come out and officiate. I told him I never really officiated basketball. All I knew was football. But, he was just letting me know, hey, you're an official. It doesn't matter. You'll be fine at it. You have training. You can talk to coaches. You'll be great. So I took his card and put it in my pocket. Didn't think anything more of it. I worked the rest of my college season. I worked the East-West Shrine game in January. Once that was over, I called Tony up the following day, and he put me on the following week. He put me on the court with a rec game, in Norfolk, like some peewee kids. And I had no idea what I was doing. I think I was standing at half court when they were shooting free throws. It was all bad. I just remember going to YouTube and watching all the YouTube videos of basketball mechanics, try to get it down pat, because I've never sat in a mechanics class for basketball. And so that was just weird. Tony came out and worked with me in a rec game in the middle of his NBA season. Mm-hmm. Well, I think they were getting ready to go to the All-Star break. And he came out and worked a rec game with me, I think like an 11 and under game. And then he worked with me a night in an adult league, which was really cool to see someone who works at the highest level and someone who's pretty much a mastermind of what they do. He's one of the best, in the NBA to still come out and work rec games and invest in his community. And he just did on-the-spot training with me right then and there. Taught me mechanics, taught me where I needed to stand, what I needed to do, taught me about coverage, just working a three-man game. And this was all during my first year. So I took all that. He goes away, and I take everything that he taught me, and I started applying it to AAU basketball. So I treated AAU basketball like I treated a high school season. Because I didn't get it, I started officiating basketball in February 2018. And so AAU and summer ball, everything to me was like high school. And I started working some pro-am that same summer. And I was just doing very well at it. And Tony's main thing was I had all the poise and the presence. I just need to understand coverage and how to call contact because, I'm officiating a sport that was all about contact and they call contact different in football. So there are some things I was letting go. There's also some times where I'll be afraid to throw I wouldn't say afraid to throw a technical foul, but I thought basketball officials had rabbit ears because, people were cussing all the time, on a football field and you don't pay them any mind. But I guess in basketball, you can hear it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, you're supposed to foul that as a foul. He said, yes, they can't talk to you like that. I said, oh. That was just a culture shock to me. But just underneath him, he taught me how to make, good decisions on the court, understanding time and circumstance and, different ways and different techniques to communicate with coaches and players and how to de-escalate situations and being able to project strength and project confidence on the court. And all those things, those are missing pieces that I had as a football official. Once I started to really intertwine that, after working a summer of basketball, I go work a fall full of football. And I would take some of those things on the football field with me that I learned on the basketball court. Mm. We barely do preliminary signals in football and basketball. It's all about your signals and reporting. And so once I started bringing that into it, I'm from a distance, 30 yards away, giving a preliminary signal to my referee with confidence. That brought a lot of attention. People are like, okay, where does she come from? Mm. She just looks good out there. So it's all about just merging those two worlds together. And Tony's actually really good because not only does he do a lot, you know, for basketball officials, he also does a lot within the community. And I think that's huge. So he's a good person that I can like rely on for professional advice. And I think that's also important, like within a mentor. So, I mean, I'm just very fortunate to be able to be associated with him.
Sounds like you've had amazing foundation between Leroy and Tony, kind of lifting you up early on in your career, giving you wings. And so take me through the next few years. You work your first summer doing basketball, and then a year later you're doing D1. Talk about that transition.
Yeah, so it's crazy. So at the end of my first summer, he told me I should go to the ODAC camp. And this was, I had only been working basketball since February. And he sent me to an ODAC camp in July. He sent me, there's me and another young lady that went with me as well, that they were really invested in us. Because they were doing something new with their high school board where they felt that a lot of times basketball officials, sometimes people could be fast-tracked if they already showed like some type of skill set that they can be taught. You know, people who are athletes coming straight off the court from basketball, you guys understand the game. You can just be taught how to become officials. Yeah. For me, it was about me, you know, transferring from football to basketball because I already knew the ins and outs of how to be a referee. And so I was just very fortunate about that. I never sat in a mechanics class or a rules class. You know, I sat in Tony's class and did that. So after my first year, I went to the ODAC camp and I didn't get picked up my first year in ODAC, but that was just like my first taste of what it was to be like in a basketball camp. Cause I've been on the football side forever as a clinician. Okay. So for me to go back as a camper, it was just weird, but I understood the process. So I guess I was cheating a little bit. I had cheat codes. So I knew what, what clinicians were looking for, you know, how to be a camper. So I didn't get picked up, but I did well. And I went back the following year and I worked my high school season and I did really well in my high school season. And so at the end of that, well, actually, let me rewind a little bit. At the ODAC camp, I hooked up with a couple of people who were doing the college rule study, you know, study sessions in my area. And I started attending those while I was working high school basketball. So I registered an arbiter and I had the test. So I'd already started studying how to be, you know, a women's college official then. And so I already had like a pretty good foundation of what they were looking for in terms of mechanics and, you know, like rules and what to do with the clock. And so I worked my entire high school season. Sometimes I would work with some young ladies and we would actually work on women's mechanics in our high school games. And I was very fortunate to have that opportunity because working under Tony, he just wanted to make sure he got the plays right. He didn't necessarily care what system that you work, as long as all three of us were on the same page. And if we're all working a system that we're trying to get ourselves to the next level, he was very supportive of that. And that just means the world for somebody to have that type of open mind and, you know, just to partner people together who have common goals. So that was, I was very fortunate about that. So at the end of that season, I went to the CIAA camp and just trying out, trying to make D2 and ended up getting picked up in the CIAA, in the MEAC and also USA South and a couple other conferences as well. And that was just all because I just grinded it out, you know, from the beginning to the end. And that was just cool for me.
Maya, you work in men's or women's NCAA?
I'm working women's right now.
Okay.
Right now.
Okay, I like that. So how was that decision decide to go do the women's? Any ambitions to try out the men's?
I guess by default, I said, okay, I'm going to try the women's because I guess the mechanics are a little bit different on the men's and women's side. And it was easier for me to learn some of the mechanics because they're real similar to high school and the women's mechanics and their coverage areas are similar to the pro system. And so I was able to pick up on that really quick. And I know the men's did some funky things with mechanics that I just really wasn't ready for just yet. So it was easier for me to learn that game. And I just think that naturally I gravitated towards the women's side because it's a little easier on your joints, you know, and some of the men's games are. So that's a little different. And so, yeah, so I just kind of settled in on that. In terms of the men's, that would be interesting. There's definitely an interest to work that. Obviously, I have another project in front of me right now with the NFL.
A little one.
That deserves my undivided attention. You know, that's exactly where my focus is right now. And then, you know, once I get through my rookie season, hopefully I'm not blasted on social media for something I've done. You know, just going unnoticed.
Right, right.
If I have a successful rookie season and I'm doing well at it, then I can venture out and, you know, try other things. But I'm never going to throw basketball away completely because it's fun.
So once you get a few years of the NFL under your belt, are you going to go full Gene Steratore mode and work major D1 basketball in NFL?
I mean, I would like to. That would be a great goal. If supervisors want to hire me, that's always the I don't make those decisions that I'm going to work these levels, you know. Mm-hmm. You still have to try out. I don't expect favoritism at all because of, you know, what I've accomplished. I still have to earn my spot.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned how basketball officials have rabbit ears. I'm interested to find out some of the differences in how to manage a game, whether it's football or basketball. Obviously, in basketball, you know, high school, we have warnings and technical fouls. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about how you manage, you know, coaches in football when really all you have is a flag, right? And I don't see a lot of flags for coaches.
You don't, because we pretty much, I don't necessarily say we let coaches say whatever, but you can't hear as much in a football stadium. Okay. I guess you can hear it now because there aren't fans there. But by nature, I think football coaches are a little more aggressive, and you have to deal with multiple coaches at a time. You're dealing with the head coach, and sometimes the head coach may not make decisions. He might designate his offensive coordinator to do that, or he might designate a defensive coordinator. And so once you start to really just understand the personalities of the coaches that you're dealing with, that helps you out. But you should always be able to go to the head coach and say, hey, I'm having a problem with your offensive coordinator. Can you help me out with this? Or I need you to help clean up your sideline. You know, we don't want to get you guys in trouble for that. So it's pretty much the same with talking and de-escalating. But it's the main thing is you don't want to see any demonstrative actions from a coach. So once coaches start stepping onto the field and they're outside the coach's box, that becomes an issue because now it can be seen by everything. Mm-hmm. And I actually have a funny story about that. I was in a camp. I was working one of Tony's camps at ODU, and Brandon Adair was there. He was watching me, and he cracks up laughing because the coach, this is my first year working basketball. The coach walks out of his box, I guess. Maybe it wasn't a box. I'm so used to calling it a coach's box from football. Mm-hmm. He like walks out of his box and is like almost like at half court at the table. He's not saying anything, but he's coaching his team. And so I turn around to him, hey, coach, get back in your box. And he just looks at me like, what are you talking about? And then Brandon's, this is an ongoing joke. He's just laughing at me like, you just don't tell coaches to get back in their box. He's coaching his team. He's doing what he needs to do. It's a dead ball period. He can come out there and talk. I didn't really understand. And so looking back at it, I'm like, okay, there are some differences. So it's just all about de-escalating that. And as long as somebody doesn't call me out my name or doesn't disrespect me, I don't think anything warrants necessarily a flag. So football coaches are also a lot easier to calm down because, you know, basketball coaches, you give up points. Football coaches, you give up yards in a football game.
Right.
You know, 15 yards, they don't want that penalty because that's a total difference. It's a lot harder to get, you know, yards and inches, you know, on the field than it is to make a couple points on a basketball court.
So I do girls lacrosse and basketball, and there's a lot of similar calls. We have a block charge, we have a hit, we have a push. So it makes a basketball official like myself, it was a pretty easy transition picking up girls lacrosse. Are there any similarities between the calls in football and in basketball?
Absolutely. So the only big difference is just the lingo of what they call it. So basketball, with it rhythm, balance, speed, and quickness, mm-hmm. when you have like a somebody that's sure. going to the basket,
yeah,
doing the layup. Up.
Yep.
So it's real similar to us when we're making those pass interference calls, but we look for material effect. And so any type of material effect that you're going to have on that receiver that's going to disrupt him getting both hands up to make the catch or him from, you know, just making a free play on the ball, that's all like judgment contact that we have to make. So it's very similar to that. Block charges are similar when we start looking at pick plays and like OPIs, like how the receivers cross across the middle, like who initiates the contact, you know, in situations like that. So it's very similar. So there are some similarities in both games. And I would say I did get stronger with being able to officiate downfield with pass interference, because with basketball, every play is a judgment play. Like you can't take plays off. You have to look at everything. And so with football, there's a delayed reaction. You have time to look at the contact, read the contact. You can throw a late flag once the play is over to see if it actually affected the play. But with basketball, you can't do that. Once you blow your whistle, you got to live with it. you know, football, your flag comes out to play, it's still live. And you can even pick it up. You try to take off your call after you blew your whistle in basketball. You know,
good luck.
You know how much trouble you've been? Oh, my bad, coach. That really wasn't a foul. You know, you got to live with it, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, so you do have that delayed response. I would say the biggest difference, also, basketball doesn't have that many rules. You know, basketball rule book's maybe like this big. Football rule book's about that big. And so your processing time in football is slower, live action, but dead ball, it has to be much quicker because you have to understand your penalties, situations, exceptions, the exceptions to the exceptions, and options to the coach. So football is a more cerebral game than basketball is. And you really only, you have less than 30 seconds to make those decisions and decipher that rule book. You know, basketball, once you understand really, you know, your fouls, travels, your simple violations, lane violations, you're good to go. Think clocks is probably the tricky thing with dealing with basketball, clocks and situational plays and how the rules change in there.
What's some of the most challenging calls for you as a football official? I'm sure you've improved in this area greatly to get where you are now, but what are some, you know, common difficult plays for football officials?
So right now, I would say the most difficult play for me to maybe officiate going into the NFL, it's the rule about illegal contact on the receiver, because we don't have that rule in the NCAA. So illegal contact is when you have a receiver that has gone 5 yards or beyond or just outside of 5 yards and he's contacted by the defender. But the key to the play is he has to be contacted outside of 5 yards and the quarterback still has to have the ball and be in the pocket. So it's a two-step process. And with me being on, I work on a line of scrimmage, which is very similar to, let's say, if you work in like the slot or the center position. So you have like that straight line view. So it's like you're trying to look at action that's going on in the lead, but you also have to see what's going on with the ball and trail sometimes to help out. So you have to have that look. Basketball, it's easy to have that look because you're on a smaller field. I mean, a smaller court, smaller space. Football, you take that and then you add a couple yards onto it. You have to look and like do a double take and almost have to make a judgment call based off of the time the contact occurred and the time that the ball was thrown. You really have to do a guesstimate like on that. And that's tough to get from my position. It's a little easier to get when you're downfield. And holds are also, I won't say difficult, but on the pro level, players become more crafty. And so they find ways to hold, and you also have actors. And it's about being able to decipher that. Was there really effect, or was somebody really acting?
Now, you mentioned your positioning and having to look in two places. Mm-hmm. So you're saying you stay put. You're not actually position adjusting like we would in a basketball game?
Correct. So on a football field, we all have our specific positions we work. So like I work on a line of scrimmage, so I'm like the alpha and omega of the plays. So you can't start the play without a clean snap. And so at the snap, I'm in charge of formations, ball starts, offsides, things of that nature. Once you have a snap and now the play progresses, if you read run, now I have to go out front and look at the blocks. And once the blocks occur, I clear each block, like each level. It's almost like working the pack, like refereeing the pack when you're coming up with in the center position or the slot position. In your transition up the floor, you got to look at where your threats are. And so it's always looking ahead. Only difference is in basketball, you constantly are looking at the ball handler because the ball handler can be fouled. In football, you're never looking at the ball carrier until towards the end of the play. You always have to look in front of the ball carrier so that you don't miss the fouls, but keep the ball carrier within your peripheral view. Then once the play is over, I'm in charge of now spotting the ball and letting them know where the forward progress is and where we're next going to snap the ball. And that can be tricky depending on which hand the ball carrier has the ball in, how he falls, you know, double action plays. Does he hit the ground first before he outstretches the ball for a first down or a touchdown? Those can be tricky as well. And I now also have to decipher if we have any penalties or fouls. Like, what are we going to do with those fouls?
You mentioned the illegal contact foul. I'm just curious, what's the signal for that? Because I know there's one that looks like a hand check.
That's illegal contact. So this is blocking the back. So legal contact is this. It's just the one hand. So it looks like can check.
Well, okay.
Yeah. So here.
One-handed push.
And then pass interference is like our push.
Good push. Nice.
Yeah. So
that's funny. There's some
similarities, but a lot of differences.
It's funny. I tell some officials to help improve their hand check signal, because hand checks, when we report it as a basketball official, it's like the softest call we have. You get there and you just kind of present it low. So I said we should look more like a football official, present it a little bit higher. I hope I'm doing it right, but it just adds a little bit more pop to a simple call like a hand check.
Absolutely.
This is just some nerd ref talk right here. You mentioned some of your greatest successes, and that's providing opportunities for other women to follow in your footsteps. And you said, in quote, getting to the top alone is great, but building credibility and earning the respect of male superiors who make staffing decisions is crucial. It's a sign that football is becoming more progressive when I have supervisors ask for my opinion on specific officials and they follow through.
It's tough. When I first came on the scene, you know, I would go to these camps as a clinician. And a lot of times I think that they would just bring me in, you know, just because I'm a woman and they needed me to check, you know, the box of saying, okay, we do have a woman as a clinician. And so it was always myself and another young lady at the time. And no one would ask my opinion on campers. And I was like, that's just so weird. Like, no one cared about what I had to say. Or I would try to recommend somebody and they just look at me like, why is she even talking? And so after I earned the right, I wouldn't say earn the right to speak, but earn the respect of, you know, my male colleagues by, you know, being an active participant, by being a clinician and being a presenter and proving myself on the field, I think people really started to take notice. Okay, she actually knows what she's talking about. And they would come to me and ask me, well, how's this specific camper doing? Or how's this person doing? Or even before we get to camps, like they'll call me up, hey, have you ever watched this young lady work? Or have you watched this young man work? So pretty much if anybody's like within this area, where I'm like the Virginia, North Carolina area, like I always get a phone call and ask, do I know someone? Mm-hmm. And that's really comforting now that they actually trust my advice and not just, you know, doing things to appease me.
Yeah.
And if I do say something about someone, they actually take a look at it. And I've been able to make a few moves, especially like with young ladies being moved up on the college level. I think after myself, we now have, I think there's about 7 or 8 women now working Division I football. And not trying to say I got all 7 or 8 of them hired underneath me, but, you know, I had a hand in about more than half with getting them advanced up and not necessarily just getting them put in a position because they're a woman, but taking the time and helping them out on the grassroots level and developing them, you know, on the high school level first, and then helping them work in a lower level college ranks and getting them prepared so that when they go in front of supervisors or they go to these camps and they work, they're prepared. And I think that's what I want to be able to do to the game, is just being someone who not only just does things to be on my level, but continues to feed, other young ladies into it as well. You know, I have a pretty good track record that whenever I leave a job or, you know, whenever I leave a conference, I always try to fill that position with someone who looks like me. You know, and I know some guys will probably be hating about that right now. But
don't hate. Don't hate, guys. Stop hating.
But there are plenty of guys on the field. So like when I left Conference USA, there were 2 young ladies that came in and took my spot and they were able to work on crews. You know, now that I left the Pac-12, we're currently looking for another young lady to come in that can work that way also. And so sometimes it's tough. You know, you want to make sure that you're given those opportunities, but I also want to make sure they're prepared. I don't want to tell a coach or tell a supervisor to give her a shot if I don't think she's ready for that level.
Thank you for listening to the Crowd Rush Podcast.
It's nice to put in the work and then see your credibility rise from those years that you put in, you know, honing your craft, and now you're able to give back to other officials. It's so important to learn through losing. And as you said, you know, you turned your failures into lessons. What mindset tips do you have for someone who's feeling frustration, maybe over where they're at in their career?
Ooh. We're all going to have that. Like, just as referees, you're naturally going to have it. And as a competitor, you're going to have it. And so it's very similar to, you know, what I said before, just focus on what's in front of you. Mainly focus on being the best at the level that you're at, okay? So if you're a basketball official and you're stuck on high school and you can't get picked up somewhere, are you a high school crew chief is what you need to look at? Are you always stuck in the U1 and U2? You know, what can you do to make sure that you become a crew chief? And then once you become a crew chief on high school, now what are you doing also to help recruit and to help enhance your board? And then when you move up to the next level, same thing with college. You know, there are different steps that you have to take. You know, everybody's going to come in at the U2. You know, you come at the U2, you become a U1, and after being a U1, are you a crew chief? And are you a great crew chief? So just focus on what's in front of you and just be the absolute best. And I think that's what happened to me. I was trying to skip steps for a little bit, like with football. You know, it was great. You know, I shot up straight from high school, straight to D1. I didn't really have to go through the hardships. And a lot of that was I talked to my college supervisor, Gerald Austin. He told me that he brought me straight to Conference USA because he knew that my road would be 10 times harder than any man. And so he understood, you know, football is not as progressive as basketball is. You know, the NBA already had women in the league for 20 years before football decided to put one in. Let's just be honest. So he knew I wasn't ready for Division I, but he also knew that I would get discouraged if I did not go underneath his tutelage immediately. And so he took that chance on me. And so I kind of just stayed in Conference USA for years and years and years when other people were jumping ahead of me. And I was focusing on the wrong thing because I got so much that was given to me, you know, right up front, that I wasn't even focused on being the best line of scrimmage official in Conference USA at the point. I was trying to jump from Conference USA to the NFL, which wasn't possible. I had to go and pay my dues that way. So
I'm interested to hear about that first year at the Division I level. You worked, what, 4 or 5 years on the high school level, and then boom, right to D1. How'd that first game go? How'd that first year go?
So I worked, this is crazy. I worked 3 years of high school. 3 years? Yeah, after my third year, I worked like a state championship in Virginia. And then I went to a college camp trying to get into the ODAC. Again, that's funny. All of my paths start at an ODAC camp. So I was trying to get into ODAC on D3. My supervisor saw me there and he got me straight to D1. I wasn't trying to go to D1 from high school. It happened. And that culture shock, because I've never watched myself on film. High school, you don't have film. Now they have huddle where you can see it. You know, this was back when I started officiating like in 2007. That wasn't really a thing. And just to be able to look at yourself on film and just see what you really look like, it's just shocking. Like you think you're like the best thing ever. And then you watch yourself on film, you're like, man, I'm trash.
So true.
I was trash. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just understanding, almost looking like a fish out of water. Mm-hmm. And there was even a time where I was at a point in the game, and it's a blowout game. I think I was at maybe University of Houston when Case Keenum was a quarterback.
Yeah.
Sumlin was coaching, and Houston was running something crazy, like 200 plays a game.
Yeah.
In comparison to basketball, it's really similar to what they're doing now, like the under 7 seconds, and they want to get a shot up. Like, it's that fast pace for football. It's crazy. And I was just running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And one of the observers there actually told me that I don't belong here and I've bitten off more than what I could chew. Somebody actually told me that. That was, you know, in a leadership position, which he probably was right. But, you know, I came in underneath somebody who's a teacher. And he just wanted to see if I would be able to keep up with the pace of the game. He wasn't interested to see if I was going to make, you know, the right calls or the best calls. He just wanted to make sure I'd be in the right spot and be able to communicate. You know, which I was, I think it was about 110 degrees at 7 o'clock at night in Houston. And I was soaking wet, full of sweat. There was no breeze at all. And that was tough.
As I was reading your bio, I saw a really cool story when, you know, your career came full circle this past season. You were working a high school game, your last high school game, in fact, and you got a chance to work your last high school game with the same crew as you did your first high school game a decade before. Talk about the serendipity and, you know, what that experience and what those officials meant to you.
Yeah, so in my high school chapter, my commissioner was always very supportive of me. And the crew that he placed me on, this is, again, when we're talking about being with people who are going to prepare you. The crew he placed me with, those guys were working college football every Saturday. They were CIAA officials, and some of them were officials in the MEAC. And every Friday night, instead of working high school mechanics, we worked college mechanics on the field. So I was working college rules. Well, college, I was going to the study sessions. But on the field, we worked high school rules, but I'd work college mechanics. And so they taught me everything I know, like in terms of how to get me to a college level to perform, you know, how to look the part. And I'm just very thankful for that. And they've always kept me grounded. And I've always kept a great relationship, you know, with my very first crew chief. And you know, I never had the opportunity to go back and work with them because, you know, high school football, college football is played at the same time. And, you know, we had to leave on a Friday. Friday night is when, you know, the high school games happen. So I missed their season every single time. And so this year, because of COVID, you know, high school was played in the spring. And that was just a perfect opportunity for me to go back, you know, one last time and be able to work with my high school crew again. And it felt the same, like there wasn't anything different. They didn't treat me any different. They still yelled at me the same way that they yelled at me, which rightfully so, because I was looking at some things, you know, I haven't looked at a high school game in forever, you know, but they don't treat you any different, you know, because they still want to do things the right way on the field. And I was just very appreciative of that. I think that's probably right now my most memorable moment, you know, as a football official, is being able to go back and still be welcomed by the same people where you got your start.
Must be amazing for them too, to kind of watch you progress and then get to watch you in the fall and then moving forward. I'm sure they're going to be watching, smiling at you. Now, Maya, you know, most females don't grow up playing the sport of football. At least my daughter won't grow up playing the sport of football. So besides seeing yourself, you know, wearing an NFL uniform, what are some other ways we can inspire females to become a football official?
Yeah, so it's just really, if you love it, that's the thing. Like, you don't necessarily, and I think I'm, you know, the perfect person to say this, because I never played, you know, competitively. I played in the neighborhood, but I just love sports and athletics. And I just like to like kind of order people around a little bit. I think that's my love for officiating. I'm in charge and you can't argue with me. So if you just really have an interest, I would just encourage anybody to get involved. And it doesn't even really have to be on the field. Like, they're looking for women to work replay. Like, we have women that are coaching in the National Football League. And I just think that's a beautiful thing, like now how it's becoming progressive and there's respect for women to be on these levels. Like, and there's a place for us in this man's world, as long as we show the commitment. But the thing is, you have to be the person to take that step out there and not be afraid to being the only person and not being afraid to being, you know, to working with people who don't look like you and working with people who don't think the same way that you do. It's up to you to learn, you know, learn from those people, learn their culture, and to just so it can be a part of something.
And what can more men, male officials, do to help promote women and help, you know, level you guys up to where we don't say woman official, men's official, it's just an NFL official?
Well, and that's the weird thing. I never address myself as being like the woman official or the female or the black female. That's never me. That never comes out of my mouth. And that's just something that's obvious. It's the elephant in the room. And I think that, you know, as long as women, we continue to not want to be, have any different titles, or we don't want different treatment, and we just look to be fair, I think guys will become less intimidated by that and they should become more welcoming. Also, what would help is, you know, there are not a lot of women that are in like leadership positions, you know, in the National Football League. And I think once that becomes a normalcy for women to be in leadership positions, you know, they're calling the shots and making decisions, then the playing field might be a little more even. You know, I'm always the type of person where I don't want you to give me something. I want you to teach me how to get it so I can always create my own. And once we open up that door for women to be in those decisions, you know, this in the decision seat, I think we will see, you know, more women involved. So I think, who was it? I was reading something about the NBA a couple years ago that they wanted their staff to be 50-50 almost at one time. Is that Adam Silver who said that? I think I read that, that they wanted their staff like to be 50-50. And you actually see, you know, that they've had women on this on the courts, you know, coaching for a long time. And they got ladies in GM positions. And if you look at it with basketball, you have men coaching women. So why don't you have women coaching men is what I'll, you know, always look at it that way. You know, so women's, you know, you don't hate to differentiate between a men's and a women's game, you know, but you have some women's players who, you know, understand the game just as good, if not better, than some of their male counterparts. It's just some physical differences as to why they're probably not in the men's game.
Let's talk about your teaching career. I know you have a decorated 15-year teaching career, and it's one of the things I connected with you on. I'm a fellow phys ed teacher for 11 years now. And I got into teaching before I got into reffing. And it's just amazing how it provided a perfect platform for me to teach during those hours, 8 to 2:20, and then, you know, have the freedom to go pick up something like officiating and fall in love with that. Sounds like you followed a similar path. Just talk about the cohesiveness between those two professions.
Yeah. Do you make your class watch film like I do?
I make them. I actually created my own YouTube fitness channel. So, yes, I make them watch my film.
No, seriously, because I do have some high school seniors, and I've gotten to a point where I had some students who are really a fit, like really interested in it. Mm-hmm. And so I would take the opportunity. I almost made it like an officiating class, you know. Awesome. So I would take like not only a semester, not really a semester, but like a unit. And, you know, we'd watch a game and I help them critique it. So mm-hmm. I would try to work it into my lesson plan. That's so it cool. kind of merges uh-huh. a little bit.
Smart.
But I would say officiating has made me a better teacher, because we're constantly looking at de-escalation techniques. And with me, I work with, you know, at-risk youth population and, you know, kids who have behavior issues. And you're always looking for a way to diffuse something. And you have a decision in officiating which calls to make that are going to impact the game and which calls are like game control calls. And that's the same thing you take in the classroom. Okay, I can put you out of class, but this really isn't that big of a deal. I'm going to wait until it's something that's really big that's going to make me want to, you know, put you out. Or what kind of interventions can I have? And you can almost say that plays both ways also with officiating. You know, what's going to warrant a technical foul or unsportsmanlike flag? Can you de-escalate it first? And so I think those are some things that mirror each other when it comes to just dealing with personalities. That's one of the things. I also think time management is important, especially in the basketball world, because you can work a game every single day. You know, and you're driving up and down the road and you're getting back to teach in the morning. You have to have your schedule tight, you know, and your travel has to be where it is. Football is a little different. We work one game a week, but we prep during the week, all week for that one game. And so that's the big difference in that. But it's about setting time out throughout the day to make sure that you are, you know, putting time into both professions and you're not cheating one over the other.
So I imagine, I know there's a lot of NFL officials, they work full-time jobs during the week. You're going to continue to teach throughout this time as an NFL official?
Absolutely. I need 2 retirements.
So what has this year been like for you? You got hired in March, I believe, right?
Yes.
So you have 5-6 months as a kind of a lead-up to your biggest moment. What has this kind of lead-up period been for you? What have you been doing with this time to prepare for September?
All right. So when everything got announced on, I believe, was it March 5th?
Yeah.
And I was just everywhere. Next thing I know, I get a phone call from some of the veterans who are pretty much like, all right, cool. You're on TV. Here are all the rules quizzes that we did last year. You need to start looking at this stuff now. Uh-huh. So they kind of just popped my bubble. So they didn't allow me to get big headed. So some veterans reached out to me right away and was like, hey, you need to work on this. Work on 5 questions a day and read your penalty enforcement book and know that from the inside and out. So they reached out to me for that. April 1st, the league office pretty much started my own rookie sessions. Right now, as of now, I'm the only person that's hired right now. So I get all the one-on-one time with the supervisors. And so, you know, once or twice a week, we're on a call for about an hour and we just go over the differences between NCAA and NFL, which there are a lot. But fortunately, you know, I worked in the XFL and I worked in the AAF. And, you know, by me being in their development program for 7 years, I'm used to most of them. And it's something that I've been familiar with. But there are still some new rules and there's new rule changes that are coming out this year, too, that I still have to get used to. And so that's what I'm doing right now at the league office. Then in about two weeks, they bring us back full time, all the NFL officials. And then they'll let us know exactly, you know, what crew we're working on. You know, if we're going to mini camps or not, if they're even having a mini camp this year because of COVID, you know, what the restrictions are. And we'll find all that stuff out come mid-May.
And how has it been for you kind of juggling 2 rule books? I know basketball officials, you know, find some difficulty when they're working a high school game and then they go work a pro-am game, or kind of, you know, not confusing the mechanics and rules from night to night. What's been your experience with that?
So that's interesting, because now I'm only working out of 1 rule book. Since I first came in, I've been working out of multiple rule books every year. I think like when I first got into high school, after my first year of high school, they gave me a college rule book. So I'm working out of 2. When I get hired into Conference USA, I also started working indoor football in arena. So I had high school, NCAA, and arena football. So I got 3 rule books. Then that following year, I got brought into the NFL development program. I finally dropped high school, but I now have college, arena, and NFL. So my whole career, I've always been working out of multiple rule books. And I think for me, being able to find a common ground, like within the rule, like, okay, knowing what rules are default across the board is a great place to start. And, you know, with us, it's like understanding what calls are, what calls can be reviewed and not. Also understanding, you know, your penalties, your 5-yard penalties, 10-yard penalties, 15-yard penalties, understanding just the basic rules that are the same. Once you know that those rules are the same, then you start looking at the differences so that you don't get caught up. So with me, the biggest difference with the NFL is a lot of times penalty enforcement after a change of possession and timing rules are different. And so just being able to focus on that now and say, okay, I knew I was weak at this. I need to pay extra attention to this. Anything else I can divert back to what I've naturally known in college, for the most part. Not trying to say that's always going to get you off the hook, but for the most part, that's where you can revert back to. And then hopefully somebody will reel me back in and say, okay, that's not what we're doing. That's the purpose of a crew, is to kind of help me out with those differences. And it's the same thing with dealing with like basketball. I was doing the same thing, had high school, pro-am, women's college. And I think I learned this from talking like with Al Batista. He breaks it down and you have to learn everything. I was on a bunch of basketball Zoom calls, during the COVID, and they broke down the rules. They talked about rules for college, FIBA, and pro all on that call. And that was just helpful to be able to just listen to what everybody else was doing and just understanding, okay, well, that's a difference. Now you just write down that difference. So if it comes across again, what you can also do, like as a basketball official, when you're watching film, like if you're a high school or a college referee and you're trying to get into the pro system, when you watch your own film, look at your positioning on the play and find out, is that positioning appropriate for all three levels that you're working, right? If you have, I think the biggest, a lot of the big difference in basketball is what are you doing with technical fouls and ball placement afterwards and shooting free throws. So understand, all because you're working it on that college level, okay, if you had to go back and be a crew chief in a high school game, what would you do on this play? Now, if you are in grassroots or you're working a G League game, what are you going to do on this play? And so it's just all about not turning the switch off, always having it on and always being able to process.
Definitely not an easy thing jumping from level to level.
No, it's not. So, but that's what separates the pros, right?
That's true. Talent always rises. Mm-hmm. Yo, Maya, you're the first NFL or the first football official that we've had on the podcast. So shout out to you. Definitely not going to be the last, because I think this is inspiring a really good conversation, because basketball officials can learn from any officials, any kind of seasoned official to have up here to share their knowledge. We're going to you can apply it to your own situation. So thank you for that. It's been a pleasure spending time with you today. Is there anything else you want to say to the dedicated audience of officials that are listening?
No, I just want everybody to just enjoy the ride, because there could be a time where it's all over, like the next day. It might be a time where, like I think it really hit us during COVID, like we were having a season and all of a sudden everything was taken away. And, people who are dedicated officials couldn't wait to get back out on the court or get back on the field. And you never know, life is very short, things happen with a change of supervisors or whatever, and you may be out of a job at a specific level. So just don't take any of these moments for granted, and just be careful with the way that you treat people, as you rise to the top. Everyone's still important. Everyone from the smallest level that you interact with all the way up to the top, that's important. How do you want to be known as an official in this world? How do you want to be known as a professional?
And I want to give a big shout out to you and the rest of your Virginia chapter. I know you mentioned you had listened to the Crown Rest podcast, so thanks for that.
Yeah, man, they're always talking about you, in our high school chapter. It's cool.
I appreciate that. And just know you're going to have a lot more basketball officials rooting for you in your corner when you take the field this fall. So we wish you the absolute best of luck, and thank you so much.
Well, awesome. Thank you.
That was amazing, by the way. You're awesome, by the way. Can I?
you know what I actually forgot? I forgot. I could have, because I'm looking at it right now. I said, dang, I thought I finished this. I could actually tell you a story about when I went to training camp and they thought I was like a stripper, like trying to sneak into the hotel room.
I'm game. If you got time, I'm down. So
yeah, let me tell you real quick. This is funny. So, they didn't really have, I say back in the day, like it was like 1920 or something, when it was really just like 2015. Like it's crazy,
right?
Like how different the world is.
Yeah.
But there really weren't any women like at the time, like in the league. And so for me, I'm not gonna name a team, but for when we get sent to training camp in the NFL, we stay in the same facility as a team does. So we're there like the whole week, and we go to practice with the team. We watch film with the team. You meet in the cafeteria with the team. So you're pretty much a part of the team. And so when I went to training camp, I was like the only woman like in the whole building. First of all, you know, I was looking like Beyonce to everybody. who have just been in camp, you know, they have not seen their wives and girlfriends. They've been away. So it's like, no matter how busted I am, I'm Beyonce. So when I first check into the hotel, I go up on the floor, and I think they, I don't know if they meant to do this or if it was an accident, but they put me on the same floor as they would put players. And so as I'm getting off the hotel, you know, getting off the elevator, I have my bag in my hand, my roller bag, and I'm rolling it. And I get stopped by these two big security guys, and they say, excuse me, are you with the so-and-so team? I said, no, but I'm with the NFL. And he looks me up and down. He goes, well, where are your credentials? I said, I haven't received them yet, sir. I'm just checking in to the hotel right now. And he goes, well, what do you have in your, well, what do you do with the NFL? I said, well, I'm an official. And he looks at me like, you're lying. Like, there's no way you're an official. There aren't any women here. And so I had to go in my bag and actually pull out like my striped shirt and show him that I'm really a referee. And he goes, I'm sorry. He goes, you know, just so many things happen. You know, these guys sneak girls up here all the time. He goes, no, I thought you were somebody's girlfriend or like a dancer that was coming in. Cause it was at a weird hour of the night. It wasn't like first thing in the morning. It was something like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. It was late. And so I go in, I said, all right, no problem. I go in, I go to sleep. Wake up the next morning, I guess evidently they didn't pass the memo that there's a woman in the house. And so again, I go downstairs, I get breakfast, and I go back upstairs again. I still don't have my credentials because we haven't been to camp yet. And I get stopped again by security. And they're like, excuse me, ma'am, you can't go up here. I said, this is my room key. He goes, there are players only on this floor. I said, no, I promise you, I'm working in the National Football League as a referee. You don't have credentials. I said, yes, sir, we haven't gotten them yet. I had to have him walk me all the way to my room and just prove that I actually belong there. So it was funny. You know, you appreciate the security that they do. And then, you know, you look at the stories that what these players do, like in their off time, the things that happen in the bubble and all those weird stories, you totally get it, you know. But I guess I was flattered too that they thought I was like a dancer or like a model or somebody going in there. So that was pretty cool.
You know, I'm going to put Beyonce music in the background.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast. Serve the game.
Questions for you, Maya. On your interview with the Today Show, you talked about being decisive and being okay with making mistakes, because we're all going to make mistakes. It's part of the business. Most important thing is not the mistake, but how you recover from it. I'd love to hear you talk more about what's been most helpful for you and sort of what your process is like.
Well, as officials, we're always going to make mistakes. You know, we're human, and there's going to be a human error aspect that goes into calling a game. And I think the best advice I could probably give is just to work each play for what it is, no matter what sport it is, you know, football or basketball. You may blow a call one play, but you have to get over it quick, because that's one play out of 200 that will happen in the game. You know, you're going to have an error. There are going to be calls that you miss. There are going to be calls that you get incorrect. And I think the main thing is to not allow somebody to influence you. Don't let coaches or players get under your skin. Continue to officiate the game the way that you know that it should be officiated. Expect mistakes to happen. And when those mistakes happen, welcome them. And when you get feedback from like an observer or another crewmate or a veteran official, and when they're trying to help you out throughout those mistakes, sometimes you just have to pause and you have to listen to what that person is saying. And it's okay to be wrong, you know. But what is not acceptable is when you don't take accountability for your mistakes. So if you make a mistake, own up to it, move on. I think one of the greatest mistakes that officials make is not taking accountability for their own mistake, or placing the blame or trying to justify what they did was correct when it was obviously incorrect. So just live up to it, own it, and move on to the next thing.
Maya, before we go, we have a lot of refs in this community who just really love officiating, whether basketball, football, or any sport for that matter. You've been a ref for 15 years. What are some of the things you love most about it?
What do I love most about officiating? I would say I enjoy the experience of working with people of all walks of life athletics and officiating especially has a knack for bringing people together from all different backgrounds, no matter the race, gender, cultural backgrounds, whatever it is, we all come together for a common goal of upholding the integrity of a game. And by us being, you know, guardians of a game, and we protect the game that so many people love, you know, with football and basketball alike, we just want to have an enjoyable experience. And it's just a great time for people to put, you know, their personal differences aside, you know, for the greater cause. And that's just to work a solid game out there and to walk off the court or the field being respected. That's one of the things that I love about officiating. The other thing I love about it is just the challenge that it brings with how much work that you have to put in order to be a respected guardian of the game. It's the process and the grind that you have to put in. And me, particularly with football, that was a sport that I didn't play. And so it was a challenge for me to actually sit down and learn all the rules and learn the formations and learn the different lingo, just really learning an entire culture of that sport. And I just embrace all challenges. And so I think that was the thing I loved the most about it. And now that I think I've not necessarily mastered it, but I have a great understanding of football, now I'm able to teach it and give back, and I can see other officials grow as well.
Welcome back to the Crown Rap Podcast. I'm your host, Alicia Tisbury. Is it about Maya Shaka? Don't forget to subscribe. Bye-bye. We'll see you next time on the Surf Game. Thanks for listening.